You both are the authors of No Boston Olympics, How and Why Smart Cities Are Passing on the Torch. And this has been a topic of conversation here in Washington, D.C. for the past couple of years of whether or not it's a good idea to bring the Olympics to the District of Columbia as well as the surrounding areas that we have. But I'll let my colleague Noah Frank, who's joining me, he's our sports editor here at WTOP, lead us off here. So go ahead, Noah.
Guys, thanks for joining us. As Chris mentioned, a lot of the concerns in D.C. and the bid was already sort of being opposed before Washington ever really got to be a part of it. But what was the biggest reason why Boston ultimately stepped up and rejected this bid after it had been awarded to them?
You know, I think Bostonians really went through an educational process because the initial polling showed that they were actually supportive of the idea of a bid. But as they learned more about the bid over time, they realized that it was not in their best long-term interest. And I think probably most critical there was the taxpayer guarantee. So the International Olympic Committee requires that host city mayors sign a contract saying that host city taxpayers are the ones that are responsible for cost overruns. And Bostonians were really not happy to take on all of that risk, which could have added up to billions and billions of dollars, all for a three-week event that really benefits the IOC more than it benefits anyone else.
Now, I'm not sure if you guys have been to Washington, D.C., the Baltimore area, a ton, how familiar you are with it, but my question would be kind of simple. Would the Olympics in the Washington-Baltimore area be a bad idea, just based on the fact that there are two major football stadiums, you know, a highways away here, less than 50 miles away? You have, you know, a number of different facilities in this area. This is a wealthier area compared to some of the other parts of the country. So what would you guys think? Do you think D.C. and Baltimore would be a good place to have them?
No. I think you guys won by losing when the USOC didn't pick you. Look, to host the Summer Olympics, you need more than a couple of football stadiums and a baseball stadium and a basketball arena. There are 35 venues. That you have 35 athletic venues. Then you have an Olympic Village, which has to house 15 or 16,000 people. And the Olympic Village also has to have an elaborate spread of exercise places and health clinics and restaurants and so on. So it's a big deal. It's a $2 or $3 billion investment. You have to have an international broadcasting and media center, which can be easily another $1 billion investment. You have to deal with transportation infrastructure, communications, hospitality infrastructure. You have to deal with security, which could be a several $1 billion expense. The general bill for running the Summer Olympics these days is $15 to $20 billion. If you add up all the Olympic revenue that a city will get from hosting the Olympics, it's around $4 billion. Could be a little more or a little less. That's not a very good financial balance in the short run. In the long run, you hear the mythology about the Olympics supposedly putting a city on the map. If Washington, D.C. is not already on the map, then I'll eat my hat.
You guys mentioned the taxpayer guarantee aspect in regards to Boston. We know now, looking back and doing the accounting, that L.A. was really the only sort of viable city, and they avoided that taxpayer guarantee. In the past, it looks like they might be in the fold again. But other than L.A., which has a lot of that infrastructure already in place and was able to kind of pull off a non-losing money version of this, like the way that Salt Lake City and Atlanta hung the taxpayers for millions of dollars. Is there any other reason why any other American city should host the Olympics?
I don't think that there's a strong positive reason, frankly. I mean, even in the case of L.A., and I think it's a reasonable bid there because they do have virtually every single venue. They'd have one or two temporary venues they have to deal with, but they're also going to use UCLA for the Olympic Village, and they have other setups that they're made for the Olympics. They have the hospitality and transportation infrastructure. They're expanding LAX or modernizing and expanding their metro system. So I think that they're in reasonably good shape, although there's still a lot of risks in L.A. and still a lot of costs in L.A., But L.A. is a city that in 1984 hosted the Olympics, and they were very fortunate because they were the only bidder back then. And so when they went to the IOC to negotiate, the IOC basically gave them a really good deal, including not having to put forward a taxpayer guarantee. This time around, there is a taxpayer guarantee. Los Angeles has to pick up the first $250 million of any cost overrun. Then California is going to pick up the second $250 million of overrun, if there is, and then it goes back, it reverts back to the city to pick up the third cost overrun. At the end of the day, it's very hard to identify, after all of these expenditures and all of the disruption that goes on for the 17 days, what is the benefit going to be to Los Angeles? Los Angeles is also a city that's on the map already. Casey Wasserman, the leader of the bid in Los Angeles, says that Los Angeles has been changing itself. It's a new city, so by hosting the Olympics, they'll be able to show this modernization of Los Angeles. But the fact of the matter is that Los Angeles has gradually modernized itself over the years, and people know about that. If you look at the empirical evidence going back to 1960 or even further back, there is this idea that you promote yourself, you burnish your image internationally by being on a billion television sets. Well, it just doesn't happen. People don't travel to Los Angeles because they hosted the Olympics. Companies don't invest in Los Angeles or trade with Los Angeles because they hosted the Olympics. There's no evidence that process takes hold. So you're, on the one hand, incurring a lot of expense and a lot of risk. On the other hand, it's very hard to identify any concrete benefits that a city will enjoy.
And you mentioned, too, in the book, and then I heard you guys doing an interview with a radio station out in Los Angeles as well, talking about empirical data that you guys have that mentions that hosting the Olympics does not lead to growth in tourism and trade. So I guess my question is, you know, in Boston, in cities that you've heard in the past that are trying to get these Olympic bids, is that essentially what the politicians and the businessmen are selling to the general public, that, hey, we are going to get more tourists in here, we are going to get more trade, more money for these cities, and it's going to benefit everyone? Is that sort of the selling point that these politicians are coming up with?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, and that certainly was the case in Boston. You know, I think Boston and the D.C. area have a lot of similarities. My sense is the economy is doing well in both places, but you still have challenges. Like, the traffic is terrible. I know in D.C. the metro system is not functioning the way that it should be. The education system isn't what it needs to be, and of course people don't want their taxes to go up to pay for those things. Well, look, the Olympics solves none of those problems. The Olympics is about putting on a three-week event and building a bunch of sporting venues so that athletes in the IOC can enjoy them for that short period of time. It doesn't address the fundamental challenges that your citizens care about, and yet their tax dollars would be asked to go to those things. And that's why it just doesn't, the math doesn't pencil out for Boston, for D.C., or for so many other American cities.
Well, taking this away from America and looking at the rest of the world, because the countries and cities that have been winning bids recently have come from places with major human rights violations, with dictatorships or certainly governments that are not democratic, and you know, the Olympics has this whole charter and all these things that they claim to endorse, placing the sport at the service of humanity, to promote peace and protecting clean athletes, and talking about environmental concerns and positive legacies and all this. And we know from Rio that was pretty much an abject failure on all those counts, between not cleaning up the bays, between basically allowing Russia to compete after a state-sponsored doping scandal. I mean, they're clearly not measuring up to their own ideals. So when it comes to this whole thing, I mean, does the IOC, do they drink their own Kool-Aid? I mean, do they believe that they're still, you know, being some sort of honorable organization, or is it really just like naked opportunism in terms of just making as much money as they can off of these bidding processes?
Well, let me say that with regard to Rio, in addition to the problems that you mentioned, I think a very critical thing that has to be brought out is that they ejected 77,200 residents of shantytowns, the favelas, in order to make way for the Olympic venues and the Olympic transportation routes. It has very little to do with the long-term development of Rio or the welfare of the citizens of Rio. They also took a city and a state and a country that were all on the verge of economic and fiscal bankruptcy, and they foisted on them these immense costs of tens of billions of dollars. And now they're in a situation where they have venues that are unused, and they're going to have to put millions of dollars into them just to maintain them. Very similar things happened in Beijing in 2008, except that instead of ejecting 77,000 people, they ejected over 1 million people, according to many reports. Does the IOC simply blindfold itself and say, we're doing this great thing for humanity and believe all of that? I think they're beginning to understand that it's not so simple. They carried out a reform called Agenda 2020 in December of 2014. Now Thomas Bach is recognizing that reform didn't do nearly enough, and he's talking about the need for more reform. So I think they're aware that the historical promise of development is not being carried out. But, you know, whether to what degree the individuals who are involved are doing it nefariously and knowing that they're hurting the local countries, I'm not sure. I think when people devote their life to something, they find a way of convincing themselves that what they're doing is what they thought it was going to do and not what it's actually doing.
Speaking to Chris Dempsey and Andrew Zimbalist here, authors of No Boston Olympics, How and Why Smart Cities Are Passing on the Torch. And last question from me, guys. I wanted to ask you about your personal experiences in essentially becoming the resistance to this movement of bringing the Olympics to Boston. And you mentioned how there were enthusiastic boosters and backers of the bid, including the new mayor, Marty Walsh. So what was it like dealing with some of the backlash of these politicians and business groups who wanted to? And how did you guys gain sort of the support amongst the community in your willingness to, or your reasonings as to why they should not be bringing the Olympics to Boston?
Well, look, it was pretty tough. And we were outgunned and outmanned in a number of different areas, in particular on financial contributions. Boston 2024 raised and spent about $15 million with an average contribution size north of $50,000, whereas we spent about $10,000 with an average contribution size around $100. So we didn't have financial resources on our side, but what we did have were the facts. We're able to talk about what the Olympic bid would mean for Bostonians, why it wouldn't make our city better. In fact, it put at risk the very bright future that Boston has. As we talked more about the bid and worked with the media to get that story out there, thankfully the media was willing and able to talk about both sides of the coin on this one. Bostonians really paid attention, and they followed that process, and they watched what this would mean, and they learned more about it. And as they learned more, they liked the bid a lot less. So in one sense, our job was hard because we were going up against powerful people. On the other hand, our job was easy because we had the facts on our side and we had a public that was willing to listen and engage, and ultimately made the right choice.
Now that you guys have been through this process, learned what you've learned, we saw the Real Sports documentary over the summer, sort of going through the various failures of some of the past games in different countries and sort of the fallout. You know, with this information out there now, what do you think that the future of this process looks like? We've seen suggestions that there should be a rotating set of permanent sites or something like that, so that, you know, the expenses aren't you know, exorbitant for every city that wants to host, and you don't have a bidding process. Do you have a proposed solution to the Olympic problem that you see as the best fit going forward?
So basically, I think if you start with the understanding that the Olympics since 1896 are supposed to be about celebrating the world's best athletes, and that it's an athletic event and not a construction event and not a royalty event, then the solution presents itself pretty obviously. And that solution is to stop going to a new city every 4 years and having them rebuild the Olympic model, costing tens of billions of dollars. That makes no sense whatsoever. So you want to identify a city, perhaps two or three, maybe there's only one out there, where that not only has the venues and the infrastructure that's needed, but they use those venues on a regular basis, so that after the 17 days of the Olympics, the venues are profitably used and productively used for the next 4 years before you host the Olympics again. Los Angeles happens to be one of those cities. Now, it's not easy for Los Angeles to do it every 4 years, and there's going to be a security bill that all taxpayers in the United States are going to have to cover. It's about $2 billion. But Los Angeles is probably the best candidate to do something like that. And it would save the other cities in the world from all of the expense and all of the disruption from hosting every 4 years.
Okay, gentlemen, Chris Dempsey, Andrew Zimbalist, once again, authors of No Boston Olympics, How and Why Smart Cities Are Passing on the Torch. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining Noah and I this afternoon. Really appreciate it. It was great stuff.
Thank you for having
us. Our pleasure. Thank you.